Good evening, all of you, from wherever you are. Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Sanders. Thank you, Embry-Riddle. This is Peter. Thank you, Thomas, for doing your part of the presentation. I hope you can hear me fine. What I'd like to do on my part of the presentation is to take you through the technical side of things. Thomas, maybe you could mute your telephone, your microphone, please. I'd like to take you through the technical side of the whole event. Thomas has more or less explained what it is we're trying to set up. But before I'm going to start my presentation, I'd like to explain to you that this opportunity we have to bring all these aircraft together one more time next year will very much be the very last time we'll be able to see all these aircraft together. The Berlin Airlift is up to this day still the biggest humanitarian action that has ever been organized by any government or any group of governments, which it was in 48, 49. And it was also the biggest effort with regards to aircraft and aviation. The Berlin Airlift stood at the basis of a lot of stuff you are being taught today in the Embry-Riddle University. Up to the Berlin Airlift, no one ever heard of flight corridors, flight altitudes, etc., etc., etc. So, in more ways than one, the Berlin Airlift is a very important moment in human history, in humanitarian history, also in aviation history. I'd like to start off now with three of the aircraft types that we're bringing in. Back in 48 and 49, there were 19 different types of aircraft involved in the Berlin Airlift, coming from a host of nations, of which, of course, the United States, the United Kingdom, and France were the biggest ones. Unfortunately, we do not have representing aircraft from the United Kingdom anymore. They flew with Avro Yorks, they flew with Lancastrians, and cargo versions of the Halifax bomber back in the day, and of course later the Henry Page Hastings, which is comparable in size to the C-54. The three main types we're bringing in is the Douglas DC-3, or the cargo version, of course, the C-47 Skytrain. It is the unsung hero of a lot of conflicts, of which the Berlin Airlift basically is. The aircraft were the mainstay of the United States Army Air Forces back in the day, until, let's say, the end of 1948, when they were all phased out and replaced by the C-54, which you see on the right side of the slide. And the French, they made a lot of ex-Junkers 52s. They had them left over from when the Germans left France in quite a hurry in 44, 49. And they took them over, they rebuilt them, updated them, and they flew them until late in the 50s. I have put some specifications in paper about the aircraft. They're all big, they're all bulky, they all take a lot of gas, and they all take a lot of room. At this very moment, we have 37 C-47s confirmed, two Junkers 52s, and one C-54. That's currently being restored in South Africa as we speak. We're also trying to bring in two consolidated Catalinas, the flying boats. They flew the Berlin Lakes back in 48 and 49, and they did considerable work. There's currently three still flying in Europe, and we're trying to bring in two of them. And the aircraft which is not in this lineup is the North American T-6 Harvard, or Texan, if you like. We're bringing four or five of them in just for photographic work. They're period correct aircraft, and there's a lot of aviation photographers, of course, who would like to photograph a formation of C-47s in the air. The preparations for this event are not easy. Bear in mind that the C-54 is 70 years old, and the Junkers 52 that is flying are almost 80 years old, and the C-47 you see in this photograph is more or less in between. The nearest aircraft to Wiesbaden is only an hour away, but as Thomas has already explained, we're bringing in aircraft from all over the globe. The aircraft currently in for the event, which is furthest away, is based in Anchorage, Alaska, and that one has a 50-hour flight ahead of him, just to get to England and then to Wiesbaden. There's 20 of them at this moment confirmed for the crossing of the Atlantic, which will take place in early May next year. But you can imagine that all the aircraft must be in top condition before they can undertake such an epic flight. I mean, the shortest leg is the leg from Greenland to Iceland, which still is 5 hours, of which 4.5 over a very cold and very northerly Atlantic, which in May, when they cross, is still just above zero centigrade. It means, as said, that the aircraft must be in top condition. Engines are being overhauled. Hydraulics are being controlled. Control surfaces, which on a C-54 are still fabric, they must be checked very well because they are easily to freeze up and burst. All the aircraft that will cross the Atlantic must have heating on board. Most of the aircraft that are flying in the U.S. at this moment haven't got the heating systems in. They are built out. They're not used anymore. But they have to be built back in. Otherwise, the guys in the front and the cockpit is very crammed, I can tell you from experience. That cockpit gets very, very cold in sub-zero temperatures. So you need heat. The tanks of the C-47, there's five of them. You've got the central tank. You've got two inboard and two outboard wings. Normally, on the aircraft that are flying these days, there's about 160 piston engine ones still flying in the world. The outboard tanks are not used anymore. That means some of the aircraft, which are only using the inboard and the central wing, they will need to bring 200-gallon drums or 100-gallon drums across, just standing upright in the crew in the cargo compartment. Of course, the comms must be okay. Rules with regards to using comms are a bit different in Europe than they are in the United States. And of course, you have a shortwave. You need shortwave radios to cross the Atlantic because you're out of communications for quite a while. Only down at 3,000, 4,000 feet, shortwave radios. And of course, you need emergency equipment for if you are going to ditch. Someone is moving my slides. Please don't. Let's go on to the next one. Preparations are underway all over Europe, all over the United States for about 40 aircraft. They're all being prepared right now. All the U.S. aircraft are going to assemble in Oxford, Connecticut for mission training, the routes, the waypoints, the airports, etc., and the flight order. Because not all the aircraft can cross the Atlantic at the same time. That's the result of the fact that the airport of Narsessuaq in South Greenland cannot host 20 aircraft of this size all at the same time. They can only take six or seven at the same time, so they are going to cross the Atlantic in three groups. And they, on this side of the Atlantic, after 30 hours of flight from Oxford, Connecticut, all end up in Duxford, England, for, as Thomas said, the first event, which is going to take place from 2 to 9 June, right before the airlift event. As said, the Atlantic crossing is not an easy one. Going from Oxford, Connecticut, and then we're going to Portland, Maine to clear out with U.S. Customs. We all have to go to Portland, Maine, because that's the northernmost airport where the Americans have customs. And from there on, we go to Goose Bay, onwards to Narsessuaq, to Reykjavik and we end up in Wick or Prestwick. That's not decided yet, in northern Scotland. From there on to Duxford, onwards to Caen in France, and then onwards to Wiesbaden, Germany. The flight time, which is represented by the green arrows, is a total of 3,800 nautical, and at a cruising speed of 125 to 130 nautical for a C-47 gives you a flight time of roughly 30 hours. And I can tell you from experience that your ass will hurt after about 5 hours of flight. You want to touch down somewhere and sit somewhere comfortable. One of the biggest challenges we're having is of course the fuel. For a C-47, you need about 400 liters of fuel. That's on the high side. In a lean cruise, you could bring her down to 30 liters per hour. But we are basing our calculations on the high number, and that means that the amount of fuel we need for 20 aircraft to cross the Atlantic to get to Wiesbaden from Oxford, Connecticut, is about 360,000 liters of F gas. That's about let's say how much is that in gallon? Well, 100,000, I think, almost 95, I think, U.S. gallons. That's a lot of fuel. And the big problem is Goose Bay and Reykjavik, they haven't got that amount of fuel. So it's going to be brought in by tanker ship. The negotiations have already been done. The fuel has already been ordered, because you need to order that amount of fuel at least 6 months ahead of time. So the fuel has been ordered, paid for by the American contingent. So that's basically almost nightmare. I don't want to call it, but it's big. The European aircraft is a whole different ball game. At the moment, there is 19 C-47s flying in Europe, and two Junkers 52s, which come from France and Germany. The blue arrows represent all the places where the C-47s and the Junkers come from. At the moment, we have 19 confirmed from Europe in regards to C-47s, two Junkers 52s, and another two which are in the process of being restored. One of them is being restored by Basler in Oxford in Wisconsin. That's coming back to Europe with the U.S. fleet. The other one, which is being restored, is based at Coventry in the U.K. Add to that the 20 that come from the United States, and you're already talking 40 aircraft. Probably will end up, I also include the T6 photo ships, we will end up somewhere between 45 and 50 aircraft, which is, as said, shortly I'm going to take you quickly through the locations we're off to. The first stop we're having is Wiesbaden Army Air Base, which is, of course, an American United States Air Force, United States Army Air Base. That was a very nice story. Like Thomas said, I met Gail Halvorsen in October 2016 when he visited a crash site somewhere close to Frankfurt. Three of his friends crashed in 48, and he wanted to lay a reed and wanted to visit his friends one last time. And I got wind of the fact that he was going to be there. So I wanted to meet him and invite him to become our honorary patron, which he now is. And there were two American gentlemen, one of which introduced himself as the commander of the United States Army in Western Europe. Short and sweet, it comes down to the fact that then and there they offered us the use of Erbenheim Air Base, which is absolutely. So Erbenheim Air Base, as you can see, is very big. It has a 2,150 meter by 37 meter. It's enormously big, and it's got all the room we need for all the C-47s and all the aircraft to park on. Our next stop is the air base of Fassburg, which is in the middle of Germany, close to roughly between Hanover and Hamburg. Its runway, as you can see, is also military size. It's big, it's long, it's wide. And the platforms you can see on the south side of the runway are, again, enormous. They're big enough to host not only our event, but as Thomas has already explained, host the German Armed Forces Day, which will be held on 15th of June next year, and during which our Berlin Airlift event is going to be the central theme. We're going to do a regional formation flight on the 13th of June, which is going to take us to Jagel Air Base, which is XRAF, and which is located very close to the Danish border. Again, a military air base, which played an important role during the airlift, as did Wiesbaden Air Base and Fassburg Air Base as well. One anecdote you probably never heard of, the fact that all the coal that was shipped to Berlin came from Fassburg Air Base. And apart from the aircraft that did the flying, they had about 15,000 civilian workers based very close to Fassburg Air Base, to 24 hours, 7 days a week long, transport coal from freight trains into the C-47s and into the C-54s to Berlin. That's how they did it back in the day. So back to Jagel Air Base. We're going to Jagel Air Base for a commemorative service on the 13th. We're going to take 12 to 14 aircraft on a regional formation flight. And, of course, we're bringing the T-6 aircraft to do some photographic work. We need to archive that. It will never be seen again. We've had that one. Let's go to the airfield of Schönhagen. We had a bit of a challenge in Berlin. Berlin has two airports, Schönefeld, of course, which is in operation 24/7, and the airport of Tegel, which is located on the northern side of the inner city of Berlin. So we had to find a suitable airport as close as possible to Berlin. We found that in the airport of Schönhagen, which has a 1,500-meter runway. It has a 900 and a grass runway, which is about 1,100 feet long, which is basically not used anymore. But this offers us the only airport very close to Berlin where we can do what we'd like to do. It is not easy. Tegel is too small to host the event, park the aircraft, and also it being in operation every day. And the same counts for Schönefeld International Airport. As Thomas has already said, Tempelhof Airport, which was the hub, basically, of the airlift itself, has been closed for 9 years. I can tell you that with regards to the authorizations, the German CAA doesn't see any problems with us using Tempelhof. We're going to do an inspection of the airport shortly, because a disused airport has overgrown, but the basic positive side of the fact is that a Junkers 52 and a DC-3 or a C-47 can land anywhere. So I do not have big problems with regards to Tempelhof. It is a political decision, which we're waiting for. And we have Gatow Airport, which is what you see in the photograph is what's left of Gatow Airport. It is closed. The runway you see are disused, and the longest part of runway, which has a cross on the eastern side, is 750 meters long, which would be enough for a C-47 to land on, but not to take off from. So we can't use it. We will probably use it somewhere to do a Gandy drop, as we will use a Tempelhof Airport. And, of course, as said, Tempelhof, which is enormous. Again, the platform to the north has enough room for all of us, all the aircraft. It also has enough room to host any number of visitors we would like to receive, to have there. And the runways are both over 2 kilometers long, so Tempelhof is the ideal location, but as said, unfortunately, is closed. That concludes my part of the presentation again. Thank you very much for listening. The one thing I'd like to tell you about is our sponsorship program. It goes without saying that an event so big and so extensive we're trying to put together will absolutely not ever come to fruition without private donations and sponsorship. So we need your help, and I'd like to appeal to you, our listeners of this evening, to become more or less our ambassadors, to spread the word, tell about our event, put it on Facebook, share us everywhere you can, and tell all of your entrepreneurial friends that they should contemplate adopting an aircraft. We set up a very interactive adopt an aircraft program in which a company or two companies for the duration of the event can adopt an aircraft. And on the slide, on the last slide, you can see the various promotional benefits, on-site and hospitality benefits, which are in this package. If you're interested in more information about this package, just drop us an email. I'm going to slide you over to the next slide, which has all the contact information in it. Drop us an email if you want to know anything more about the sponsorship program. As said, going back to this slide, it will never ever come to fruition without the help of a lot of do-gooders. So thank you very much. Sandra, back to you, please.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you very much indeed. Yeah, we will now take a look at the questions that have been coming in via the Q&A during the presentation, or you may type in a question now. We will take the questions in the order they come in and answer as many as we can in the next few minutes. I have seen there's a lot of comments rather than questions I saw, and possibly Peter and Thomas, you can go over those at a later point. I'd like to address the questions right now.
Yeah, no problem.
So there was one question by Gonzalo Hurtado. He wanted to know, is there any chance to join you guys on any of those legs? Kind of answered that a little bit, but...
Yeah, well, basically, Gonzalo, we're good evening, Gonzalo. Thanks for your question. Basically, I'm sorry to say that's not going to be a possibility. We will not be able to allow passenger flights from A to B, but we are going to try and organize scenic flights for everyone to get a ride on one of the aircraft.
You're fading out a little bit, Peter. I don't know.
Can you hear me fine now?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Gonzalo, I'm sorry to say, but you will not be able to join us on the legs. I'm sorry.
So, will this information be presented at a Sun and Fun in Florida next April is the next question. That's by David Shiflett.
David, good evening. It's Peter. Sun and Fun has invited the American effort of bringing the aircraft over, the American effort or mission, if you'd like to call it, to bring the aircraft over to Europe. It's called the D-Day Squadron. We are indeed invited to show up at the Sun and Fun event in April next year, which, as you know, David, is a very big is a biggie. I'm trying to be there next year in April, but I don't know whether I've got the time with it. Pretty full schedule. This information will not only be presented at Sun and Fun, coming back to your question, but you will be able to find all the information on our various websites. So if you'd like to visit our event website, which is called www.berlinairlift70.com. All the information presented now is going to
So they're also in the helpful web links underneath the chat and questions box. So all the links are listed there, and we will also list them in the follow-up email that we'll send out tomorrow after the webinar, with the link for the on-demand and the slides as well. So you can read that and have the links and send them to your friends and colleagues and anyone who's interested. The next question is, has anybody approached Red Bull Energy Drink? Their aircraft was the one I flew in 2008 when I was there for the closing of TCA.
Thomas, do you want
to... Yeah, thank you for this question. We have approached Red Bull, and we are in talks with several sponsors, and Red Bull is one of them.
I can tell you quickly, Barry, I've seen your question. We will not bring in the DC-6 Red Bull has, because it is, although it is a DC-6 aircraft, it never flew during the airlift. Therefore, it's not period correct. Not bringing their wonderful DC-6.
Thomas was asking, will tickets be required in advance to attend one of the airfield events?
No, all Thomas, all events are open to public. What we have to think about is Schönhagen, because we have some special events there, but this is... let's say under construction, but all the others, the event in Erbenheim, in Fassberg, in Jager, which is a small event, they are just open for public, and we will not take any fees or something like that.
And Everett is asking, have you been in touch with actual pilots and crew flying the airlift? Or Neil, actually, sorry. Yeah. Neil Holland was asking
that.
We are
and have been in touch not only with pilots and air crew and ground crew for that matter, but we're also in touch with a number of Berlin children that survived the airlift and still have very fond memories. Everett, Neil, we're going to try and bring in all of those people to one of the three locations which we're going to be at next year. Yeah.
All right, and Barry is asking, has anybody talked to either Jill Horowitz, president, or Mike Hoff, VP of the Berlin Historical Association?
Thomas?
They work with the museum across from Berlin.
Yeah, Barry, thank you for those questions. We have been in very close contact with the Allied Museum. We have not met Jill Horowitz yet, but thanks for this idea. We will contact him. Mike Hoth, the Vice President of the Berlin Air Historic Association. No, we haven't met him, but we'll talk to him. Yes, thank you very much.
So I think we have time for two more. Gonzalo was asking, what was the communication with the USSR back then in regards their airspace and the tension that could be created if you guys would breach their airspace? So back
very,
then, I guess.
Very very simple back then. Gonzalo, the Russians gave the Western Allies three corridors. They had to fly in to Berlin via the south and the northern corridor, and they had to fly back through the central corridor, which is basically going to east-west. If they got out of that corridor, and that corridor was, I think, it was 20 miles wide and not a centimeter wide and not an inch wider, if they went out of that corridor, they were threatened to be shot down by Russian aircraft, which basically... I think also happened once or twice during the airlift. So that's basically what the Russians did. There was communication, of course, but that communication was based on animosity and not on friendship at all. Does that basically answer your question, Gonzalo?
Let's address one more before we have to cut it off. Would you be interested, would you be interested in doing a radio show for the Eastern Airlines Group? Airlines radio show has over 1,000 members worldwide.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Everett. If you'd like to be in touch with either Thomas or me, Everett, no worries whatsoever. You can find both Thomas and my email addresses at the bottom on the bottom slide. Yes, please. We would like to be in touch with you. No worries whatsoever.
So, I think we have to wrap this up. Thank you again to our two presenters, Thomas Keller and Peter Braun. This officially concludes the webinar now. Watch out for a follow-up email with the links to the recording and the slides. You may log out at any time now. After the session, we have a survey coming up that you can do, and it's optional. On behalf of Embry-Riddle, our webinar is now concluded, and this is Sandra Williams saying thank you and goodbye. Thank you, Peter, and thank you, Thomas.
Thank you for listening. Thank you.
Thank you all for touching faith with us. And as I said, if you have got any questions, just answer them, shoot them here, or